You're listening to The Mixtape Remedy,
a podcast about the therapeutic impact music has on our lives and our creativity. I'm Emma.
And I'm Matt. And in today's episode, we have oil painter, vocalist for Despite Despair, Brett Barrett on. And the song we're going to be talking about is
Rap Snitch Knishes by MF Doom.
Wow. Mm. As always, wow.
Mm.
Wow, wow. Rap Snitch Knishes.
Is this our first hip-hop song?
I think so. It might be.
What a way to come in.
Yeah, one of the greats.
With a boom, or should I say, doom.
With a bang.
With a doom? Get not it? With a boom, but with a doom?
Yeah.
I like that actually a lot. That's
face.
Really good. That's a really good album name.
We're here with the late, great, we're talking about the late, great MF Doom.
Yep. With, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about what you do.
I'm Brett Barrett. I'm the vocalist for Despite Despair. I've been oil painting for 5 years and, you know, and... doing everything for it, the marketing, the sales, the shipping and receiving, everything.
That's cool.
Every aspect of the art side of things. And I've been playing music maybe since I was like 14 or 15, you know, in the Salt Lake City areas and Utah County areas.
Yeah.
And in various bands here and there, but
yeah. How long has Despite Despair been around? How long have you, like, you've been, like, gigging at least, like, with together, or?
Totally. We started in 2008.
Wow.
When I was 17,
wow.
And I went to Timpanogos High School.
Cool.
Yeah, Timberwolves. And, I think we were called The Contrast at the time.
The Contrast.
And I was writing a zine that was like a counter-recruitment zine. It was like reasons not to join the military.
Oh,
and
nice.
It
good
was
job.
Called Despite Despair. And I ripped it off of the late, great local hardcore band Parallax.
Hmm.
Yeah. Their late vocalist, Blake Donner, who tragically died in a cave with three other friends in 2005.
Dang.
The last song that he wrote, one line was, "Despite despair, I stay inspired." And me and some friends always were, you know, that was sort of like our mantra, our go-to. It was our philosophy.
That's very cool.
So at one practice, I had suggested the name change, and it was just like, we were all like, we got this like look in our eyes, you know, it was like, yeah. Yeah, like that should be the new name, you know?
That's dope.
Yeah, that's very cool.
I was actually playing guitar maybe until 2015, where I wrote Geist, which got released on Panic Records with other hardcore bands like Trial and All Teeth.
Cool.
To name a few. And went on various tours across the country and the West Coast and... Had a lot of memories doing it.
That's
cool. Made a lot of awesome contacts and
super cool.
Yeah, so that's a little bit about, you know, me and what I do.
Cool.
Rad.
That's dope.
Rad. So MF Doom. MF Doom.
Daniel Dumile was his name, and he was born in London. And then he moved to New York as a young boy.
Yeah.
And I never knew that he was born in London. Until he died, I like felt, you know, connected to him in a way. Like, death has a way of mythifying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
People, in a way.
Well, even in life, like, he was... Because, like, he would do things like pull... He would, like, get other rappers to show up and pretend to be him and, like, do his verses and stuff. But, like, obviously not him, you know? And he would do stuff like that just to, like, fuck with people. Because he played this mad villain character, obviously. And so he would do kind of, like, shady things, which is so funny. And, like, that's why he feels mythical to me. It's because he didn't actually take it all that seriously. Like, he wasn't like, I have to be there. I have to do everything's my own, you know, whatever. He was just like, yo, you want to do this show for me? Cool. Yeah. You're on at 8. I'm going to go hang out with my family.
What was your introduction to MF Doom?
I was introduced to MF Doom in 2012. It was from a college roommate and comrade, and I was an anti-war activist at the time, attending Utah Valley University, and yep. MF Doom was just, like, always playing in the background. I think I was maybe disillusioned with, like, punk and metal and aggressive music at the time, and hip-hop was like this new fresh alternative that had many of the same like charms,
mm-hmm.
you know, like it was socially conscious or introspective, but it was just like on another level, you know. It's the way in which those politics were being expressed, like the form in which it was being expressed, was new to me. And so exhilarating to get into that. Like, anyway, MF Doom was just one of those artists that was in the backdrop of my time being like a proud, you know, maybe naive, like, you know, college activist, like doing a lot of organizing and like needing to come home after a stressful day of organizing and needing to like chill out and not have to be like so in your face and angry all the time.
That's cool. Yeah, that I get that 100%.
Although MF Doom is definitely like powerful and impactful in a lot of his music, he's still very much like
you could just vibe chill to him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really do like.
Well, it still has some of that similar energy that I feel like punk and metal and rock and all of those things have.
It's like I like the kind of it's in your face, but it feels more like a gentle caress than versus like someone being like,
Would you say this is like definitely your introduction to hip hop, or had you been like a hip hop fan for a while?
Like, I think my first hip hop was Wu-Tang Clan, Into the 36 Chambers, or Immortal Technique, again, who I felt was very, you know, like left leaning as far as his politics were concerned.
Right.
And I don't know, but maybe going back to like the death mythifying, like MF Doom, like he was always the underground artist.
Yeah.
And then when he died, it was just like social media just blew up. And it kind of has that tendency to do so nowadays, right? We're all so locked in constantly to our phones and our accounts. But it was tremendous to see this collective mourning of such a prolific like hip hop artist. And you know, even though he's like, it's sort of this like, you know, I don't know, resurrection motif or whatever, you know, he's sort of brought back to life through his collective mourning.
Well, I really, you know? I agree with that, because I also felt that like, I knew MF Doom wasn't like quote unquote underground. Like, he's kind of the lo-fi-esque style, you know, not super overproduced. It's pretty simple, and it's all about the kind of spoken word. But to see how many people saw his death and were mourning was actually like refreshing, because it's, you see it and you're like, okay, he was known, like people did know who he was, and I'm glad, because he had a lot of really great things to say. So that means a lot of people were more aware of his poetry and his words and such, which is so cool.
Yeah, definitely.
And it feels refreshing. Like I took a lot of like joy from that. I actually, from that, I found a Spotify playlist that literally compiled every song he'd ever like done or been involved with. And it's all compiled onto a playlist, and I would just shuffle it.
Well, I think that's a good time to mention his variety of names. Like he went by so many different artist names.
Yeah. Because he would change his name like with almost every release.
Yeah, if you knew him as King Ghidorah or Victor Vaughn, Metal Fingers, just Doom, Metal Face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he would do collaborations and like bands Mad like Villain. Mad Villainy and or Mad Villain, I mean. And he did Danger Doom. Let's see who else. Oh, there's just so many, but yeah, like, and modern, but bands that do that are honestly a little infuriating. Like the OCs. I love the OCs, but when I listen to the OCs, I want to listen to everything that like John has released, including like his folkier stuff. Or his dronier stuff.
But I can see why they do it, though.
Yeah.
I think it plays into that underground element. Like, he doesn't want to be, like, caught on. So he routinely changes his name to kind of stay fresh and new.
So only the most dedicated will seek it out and find it and care about it.
I just think Daniel is such a prolific artist in its very definition, because, like, he understands the sort of limits that he has to travel to like make an artistic statement effective. You know, that's why he's maybe not limited to just doing one project. He'll just collaborate with who he's authentically trying to connect with or accomplish with. You know, he's done collabs with Ghostface Killah, Danger Mouse, KMD, Madlib, to name a few. Like, speaking of Wu-Tang, you know, like, I almost feel like his whole mask gimmick is one of those other things that, you know, he's thinking creatively. He's almost thinking in a theatrics sort of like way.
Well, and again,
you know,
like
how he can,
he's like, he would send other rappers to do shows and stuff. Like, that's such an interesting idea and such a weird kind of dangerous thing. Like,
I would also
be mad. I came here to see Daniel, not this guy wearing a Doom mask.
But you don't know.
Well, you do, because like, you,
I mean, if they sound different
and look different.
So I want to know more kind of from your opinion, Brett, about his image. Why do you feel like he was an artist who kind of used a mask?
Because fame is awful and degrading to the human spirit.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. When was it introduced? Because did he wear it his whole career?
Let's do a little research here. Yeah, well, I actually pulled up his Wikipedia.
People knew. Here's the thing, I'm just here with it.
Oh, he's
so so I know that people knew who he was because I think it was revealed because one of his children died and he made a post and it came out, and so people knew who he was, but he was very much just a private person. He tried to stay away from the limelight, and he would go long stints without like making public appearances, as far as I'm aware. But yeah, like, people knew who he was, but he would wear the mask and be MF Doom or Doom or whatever.
He always performed in a mask, which reminded of Marvel's Doctor Doom.
Yeah. There's a lot of he's a lot of comic book references, like especially in this song too, like the Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah,
I'm stretched like elastic. He's like Mr. Fantastic and incredible. It's great.
So, kind of knowing your background with MF Doom, what made you want to bring him here today? This song too.
Yeah.
Because I won't say what, but I'll say I had a lucid psychedelic experience with this particular song.
Dope.
And binged it for perhaps 6 hours.
Wow.
Or so.
Wow. I don't think I've ever binged a song that long.
And I think I was losing my mind and had to go to something that was like comforting.
Uh-huh.
You know, something familiar.
And MF Doom was that for you, or MF Doom was the ruckus part?
This particular song actually is what I binged for maybe 4 to 6 hours.
Right.
Like this,
and then you
like
needed
rap,
something
snitch,
else.
Knishes. And I did it when I was painting this very large piece that I called Cosmic Skullfuck.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And the experience was so intense for me at the time. I believed in sort of my mind's eye, or like my intention with the painting was to do this sort of science fiction-y Mobius, if you know Mobius.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Science fiction piece, but it just like I was really losing my mind at the time, and it kind of turned out to be what looks like maybe like a grindcore like record cover or something. It's kind of really scary. There's many like forms that are being overlapped on themselves, and at the time, Rap Snitch Knishes has that guitar part that loops and it phases in and out between both speakers with the left and the right, the echo, the delay, all of the body and the almost like the room sound of this sample, you know, provided this incredible
atmosphere?
Soundscape,
like atmosphere.
You know, to the creative process,
totally.
And you know, I just feel like the experience really connected me with Doom's creative mind, which is a mind that is always like trying to conquer fear, right?
Right.
There's a really incredible book that's called Art and Fear by David Bayless and another author whose name I'm forgetting. And it talks about the creative process and how it's always a fear conquering process.
Yeah.
It's always a, you can do this. You can figure this out. This is easy. There's a way.
Yeah.
It's that voice that compels us to create in new ways, right? In our sort of dystopian modern society and living in COVID, we have to create new and creative ways of living authentically and connecting to art and to our own selves and what's important to us culturally or musically.
I agree with the fear, like conquering. Well, when you say like it's easy, it feels easy and you can do it. That's like watching a great painter paint. They make it look easy, you know, or a great athlete. Like it's like, oh, I could do that. And then you practice. You're like, no, I can't. But then you can choose then to either overcome the fear of being like, oh, I'm not as good as they are, or tackling it directly and trying to get better. And that's what like art like this does to me, is I want to write, after I listen to MF Doom for any amount of time, I feel like writing poetry. I want to write poetry because he's just, it's these references, and I like to consider myself fairly well read, and you know, I'm fairly informed, and so I like want to write something. I want to write something, but then every time I do, I look at it and I go, this is complete and utter bullshit. You know, but I keep doing it because it's fun, and I get better at it each time. So,
definitely. What do you think?
I love that.
Yeah. What do you think it is about this song in particular that stood out to you to encourage a 6-hour loop, if you will?
Yeah.
What is it? The context? Is it that guitar riff? Is it just like, yeah?
So like I guess we should talk about the text and the subtext of the song, right? It's like on the surface, he's talking about calling out rappers who are bragging about like living these
their crimes, overt, basically,
like gangster lifestyles, yeah, and how it always ends up sort of badly, you know, and Doom is trying to talk about like something alternative, you know, and yeah. Anyway,
yeah. Well,
I think on a deeper level for me, though, it's certain phrases like let me pull up his lyrics here. Yeah, for example,
I have the lyrics right here. I'd love to get a screen like up there that I could like put the lyrics on. That'd be great.
It's one of the end lyrics. It's actually one of Doom's lines, not Mr. Fantastic, who has incredible like flow nonetheless, but Doom's cadence, his rhythm, it, you know, like if you're a drummer, you can hear Doom's sensitivity to rhythm and rhyme, mm-hmm, and that's what makes him an incredible,
yeah,
master,
yeah,
rapper. Absolutely.
Well, and that's like one of the reasons why you can vibe to him so hard, is because there, that rhythm is always there, and so you can always have something to kind of bounce to. It feels, yeah, good.
His flow is absolutely iconic. Yeah. This line, or this few lines rather, I'm gonna read. Hitting on many trees, feel real linen, spitting on enemies, get the steel for tin men. Where no brains but gum flap, he said his gun clap, then he fled after one slap. Son, shut your trap, save it for the bitches, delicious rap snitch knishes.
You know, I love it when people, I love it when people enunciate the word bitches. Like, it feels really good. Like, hello, bitches. It's like, oh yeah, thank you.
That felt like slam poetry. Yeah, I love that. Have you done poetry before? Like poetry delivery on stage? I feel like you could do it. You got good vocals for that. Good reading vocals.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. It sounded genuine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel
Doom.
It's about that like just like,
you talk tough, but the moment something bad happens, you're,
yeah, he, yeah, doesn't, yeah, feel any sympathy for people who meet the consequences of, yeah, their, yeah, snitching.
Well,
right? Yeah. Doom is drawing a parallel between snitches and the heartless Tin Man,
yeah,
and the brainless Scarecrow from The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
That, you know, I sold security systems for a big company I won't name, yeah, but started with a V.
and figures as much.
Yeah, isn't terrible.
And I became so disillusioned working this job in the deep South and seeing some of the poverty in the South was like very, very shocking to me at the time, you know. It's just like a white ex-Mormon boy, like going, yeah, to the South for the first time,
mm-hmm,
and seeing just how much like racism there still is in the South, and how really, you know, it is about white supremacy is still the problem.
Yeah.
Very clearly. It's, mm-hmm, just a little more apparent, a little more in your face, a little more naked in the South. And at the time, working this job, I was listening to a lot of underground, like hip hop, like Atmosphere and POS and Doom. And it's those kinds of artists that are it's almost like they're still like blues artists in the sense that they come home and they're going to tell you about their
problems.
Day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're talking about their problems but and in the a shit really they go through
real
on a day-to-day
and authentic
basis.
Way.
So that Wizard of Oz thing, I was listening to Doom also in the South, and I came upon this little vegan restaurant, and they were showing the Wizard of Oz, and just, I still had like my headphone in, like one of the ear plugs in, right? Just like still bumping MF Doom, and like realizing like I gotta fucking come home and do my own thing and get out of this like shitty job, you know?
That's,
I don't know. So it's one of those artists that has been recurringly important to me throughout the years. Whose motifs I continually want to revisit, who continually teach me things about society and about myself.
The
socio and individual critic.
Totally.
And what is genius about him.
I think that he provides a perspective that, like you were mentioning, as a white, like middle class person or whatever, to experience poverty and racism from an outside perspective, and that these artists serve an important purpose for white listeners and for, you know, other listeners, that they're sharing their perspective, they're sharing their authentic experience in a beautiful, not necessarily relatable, but a beautiful way.
You can read and understand and be like, wow, like, okay, I understand. I really like the beginning of his verse in this, the specific one. True, there's rules to this shit. You know, fools dare care. Like, I love that because it's true. The idea of this song to me, like the subtext I feel is he's saying, like, stop doing it because it's popular or cool. Do it because it's smart. And that's what he's doing, is he's calling out these dumbass gangster rappers who are talking about all the crimes they commit and then end up on the pulpit, and literal evidence is there because they talked about doing it.
And he's like,
it's popular because a lot of they're doing it and they're getting caught for it. Think before you do it.
One
like, just think about it for a second. You realize how stupid it is.
Well, there's a super recent artist who is in prison for murdering two people. Oh my gosh. And he's, what is his name? It starts with a Y. I'm going to figure it out. But anyway, I have kids who share this rapper or, you know, patients or whatever, and we'll listen to their music, but it's kind of interesting to, I'm like, how does it feel to listen to the music created by a murderer who straight up like killed two people? Like, I don't know. Like, and they think that they're relentless. They think that they're invincible, that they can like not do these inhumane things.
They're above.
That they're above the law of like humanity because they have fame and they have accomplished whatever. But I mean, as far as Brett's experience goes, I don't really feel like the context that much was feeding into your experience as much as like the overarching theme that you mentioned about like fear with MF Doom and just like his artistry rather than like the context of if you're going to be like a gangster, you got to pay the consequences or whatever.
Well, he's saying if you're going to brag about all the things you've done, don't be surprised when the cops roll up and be like, did you do this list of things that you literally listed in this song?
Okay, so the artist was YNW Melly. He was in prison.
I was going to say, like, the artists that we might see a lot or are forced to confront a lot is like 6ix9ine.
Yeah.
You know, he's like a snitch.
Yeah.
And the, you know, it's just like Doom's just saying, watch out who your heroes are.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, to like.
I like that a lot.
To the black youth, to the inner city youth. That's all.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, and, to anyone, yeah. But
yeah, and
for sure.
I think that at the time, you know, like, there are a lot of, like, preconceptions, like, white kids can't listen to rap or whatever, but...
Yeah, that's not true.
They need to.
Yeah.
Totally.
Because it allows them to understand.
None of my lyrics would have come to fruition had I not really gotten into hip-hop, you know?
Just don't sing along saying the N-word and you're good.
Oh, yeah.
That's all you gotta do, my dudes. Yeah,
I mean, fuck white people who... You know, think it's okay to say the N-word and say that. I think it's
even in the song context, it's not okay, my dude.
Yeah,
it's, like,
yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's not white people's word to say that.
But white people can definitely listen to hip hop. They just can't say, "I relate to this exact experience." It's like, unless you've like experienced.
Well, you need to approach it as a potential for learning.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like anything else you do. Uh-huh. Like you consume the media just like you'd read a book to learn about something or to experience something. You should listen to music for the same exact thing.
Yeah. And you know, as far as activism is concerned, like white allyship starts with first listening.
Totally.
And second, listening. And third, asking how you can help.
Yeah,
exactly. And asking
how and pointing, you know, credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
And, you know, if people would overcome maybe some of those preconceptions they have about hip hop and you know, race generally, they would be able to embrace some really, really incredible artists.
Yeah.
You know, at the time I was getting into Miles Davis and listening to a lot of jazz at the time, again, is like a solace away from just the punk and the metal predictability that I was like really experiencing at the time. I think maybe to tie it back into like a therapeutic sense, you know, there's a handful of states that are really heavily decriminalizing psychedelic therapy.
Yeah.
And I find this to be like absolutely incredible. You know, I think that there's going to be big benefits.
Oh,
for,
I agree.
For sure.
The mass.
There's already some movement happening here in Utah, which is cool.
We see, we're seeing,
it's so exciting.
Yeah, articles regularly talking about new discoveries, new evidence, new ideas that are coming about because of it. So great. I'm so excited.
So you were starting to talk about like the creative and therapeutic aspect. How was this experience or maybe other experiences like this that you've had contributed to the therapeutic, your therapeutic impact of
or your creativity?
Yeah, and your creativity.
Definitely. It's about creating new possibilities or chasing the idea that there are always new possibilities.
Absolutely.
And Doom understands this. It's what makes his art effective. People are always fixed on what's the definition of art? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It matters if the art is effective or not. Doom teaches me this through his flow, through his lyric writing, through his artistry, through him seeing through the bullshit of not wanting to be attached to the fame
and
of
the
wanting
name
authenticity.
Too.
Yeah.
He's changing his name because I think, yeah, that's great.
I think for me personally as well, I feel, you know, whether it's depression or anxiety, it is often fed by the self-talk that says you can't or you should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Rather than things just are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the definition of authenticity. And yeah. I think that Doom is very, I think Daniel is very
teaching you how to be present
about, in his flow, in his writing style, right? This sort of lo-fi, chill backdrop of a beat. His freestyle cadence, his rhythm, his attunement to rhythm, everything, you know?
Yeah.
Those kinds of things, when we listen to them, are therapeutic, are cathartic, or if he inspires us to create, then he himself has given us the most contagious thing.
Well, a reoccurring thing that comes up on the podcast is the ability to relate, but in ways like I love it. His references to food, like knishes, like, they're delicious. I love knishes. And so to know that MF Doom loves them enough to sing about them, and, you know, his references, you know, a lot of pop culture, which is, again, consumed by everyone. It doesn't matter. It's that relatability, but at the same time, he's telling you something that you should know, and it keeps you present. I do that all the time when I'll put on his music in the background to try to, like, to just have background music, and I can't. Because every time I just hear something and I just come back into the moment and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
So I can't listen to MF Doom if I'm doing stuff.
I think the overarching themes kind of that I'm getting is that a lot of times when we experience depression and anxiety and all of these things, we become very narrow-minded. And we become very, like, stuck in one mindset or one thought process, and it's probably a super negative thought process, but sometimes if we, like, seek things from an alternative perspective, or even like what you talk about with psychedelics, is that they can often help us, like, broaden our perspective, or allow us to, like, perceive things from an alternative angle to enable us to be present. And then adding that creativity on top of that to kind of process and experience the moment in the present even more can be incredibly therapeutic and helpful, especially, you know, with an artist like MF Doom, who just, like, seeps authenticity. We talked about artistic authenticity and how refreshing that is to experience an alternative perspective.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's about being your true self. Yeah. You know, that's what being authentic
because
is.
Because it wasn't about what he looked like. It was about his art. Yeah, he was hiding behind a mask. He would purposely not show up to shows because for him it was about the poetry. It was about the artistry of what he was creating that was important. And like, I'd be a little mad if I went to an MF Doom show, but ultimately you're still hearing the same tracks. It's just, you know, a different person's, you know, singing the words.
Totally. And totally.
That doesn't mean the words aren't any more awesome or cool or thrilling.
I wanted to mention something about the use of psychedelics.
Yeah.
How much time are we?
Yeah,
okay?
Go for it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
So, I mean, the whole thing with, like, psychedelics that's fascinating and coinciding with creativity is that it breaks our sort of homogeneity.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Our, right? It's our default, you know, mode,
routine.
Right? It increases neuroplasticity in the brain, and it helps us create new neurological connections that may not have existed before. That's why it's been medicine to traumatize brains.
Absolutely.
And anyway, I find it fascinating and hopeful that, you know, we'll hopefully be able to make these sorts of progressions with, you know, psychedelics used as medicine.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Breaking the stigma that, you know, exists with it and these kinds of things that people think, well, if you take psychedelics, you're going to jump off a you know,
a bridge.
Well, I mean, as long as there's, like, healthy circumstances and safety is a part of these experiences, all these things, you know, and being aware of you and your individual self and, you know.
Yeah, being, especially, having a level of self-awareness.
But also, like, the the cool thing about the research that's happening is actually like guided therapeutic experiences where we can take that expertise of mental health and trauma and the, you know, these limiting experiences that we can have,
yeah,
and having like that, you know, professional, yeah, help on top of that too. But I also am an advocate of like having these creative experiences among yourself too.
Personal experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a, you know, in a safe space and safe mindset and all of those things. Yeah. But
yeah, it's all about set and setting, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with that said, what, when you listen to this song, what do you envision in your mind's eye? I mean, you were listening to the song on loop while painting a kind of scary picture. Is that, does that image come into your head when you listen to the song, or do you think of other things?
Yeah, if anyone has sat with me on like a live painting session, any notions of them thinking it's like a spooky or, yeah, dark or like morose process, like, yeah, they're disillusioned pretty quickly. Like, I like to just have fun when I paint.
Yeah.
And I had really realized how, yeah, just even how many boundaries I was placing on my art before that experience and before, yeah, maybe, you know, experiencing what I did to Rapsnitch Kanishas, yeah, for a handful of hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about finding a flow.
Right.
And it's about finding what is fluid and is easy, mm-hmm, to us.
Yeah.
And it's about not thinking sometimes. It's about being. It's about being present.
Yeah. Limiting our limitations.
Definitely. There
Set
are
yourself
so many,
up for success.
There are so many wonderful things that come from doing art, whether it's, you know, playing an instrument or, yeah, you know, painting a picture. It communicates what our corpus callosum is on fire. It,
yeah,
it,
yeah,
it's our left and our right brains communicating,
yeah,
in new ways.
Yeah.
And that's where I see maybe an explicit therapeutic benefit.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
Like I grew up listening or not listening. I grew up watching a lot of Bob Ross.
Oh, yeah.
You know, academics.
He would have been a great art therapist.
Dude, yeah. Oh my God. I mean, he basically kind of was in a way. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Love Bob Ross.
Oh my goodness. I just like so much of my creative philosophy is so inspired by Bob Ross.
And that's a great philosophy to be inspired by.
Yeah.
Like, accidents happen. Roll with them. Like, I love that approach.
It's this idea that we as artists will often create something that we put so much work into.
Yeah.
And when we release it, perhaps its reception is less than what we felt it deserved. And oftentimes our mistake creations are the things that get maybe catch an eye in a strange way.
Yeah.
These kinds of surprises is what we learn from doing art, that we just have to take things almost like,
yeah,
like water.
Yeah, I agree with that. I love
in the river.
And I love hearing those little mistakes in some, or like seeing those mistakes, because it kind of humanizes it, you know?
Definitely. Yeah. You can see Doom get in these creative flows where he'll rhyme maybe, you know, two or three words with two or three words, and then he'll chain it with another two words that rhymed with B. I mean,
yeah,
his technical prowess is it's genius, because it is both things. It is mechanical and organic.
Yeah.
He has flow and he knows where it goes and why.
Yeah.
That's sort of uncovering truth process is at the heart of art making.
Yeah.
Oil painting particularly is so forgiving, because you make a mistake And it's that same, to me, Bob Rossian attitude that just says, oh, well, fuck it. Just keep going. Yeah. It's not going to dry now anyways, so you might as well just push around.
Yeah.
And it's like playing with clay a lot of the times, you
know? Absolutely.
That's great.
Rad.
I love that philosophy a lot.
Yeah.
Because I sometimes struggle with that. Like,
philosophy.
Especially in guitar, is sometimes I will push myself too hard, like on stage, and I will miss a note during a solo because I'm trying to do something that's outside of my reach, and I'll miss a note. But I can't, during a live performance, I can't stop and go back. I can't be like, oh, no, we have to redo the whole song because I missed the solo. I have to run with it. And so a lot of the time, like, those little mistakes, especially like in recording, like we have a lot of really cool moments in both of my band's records that came from mistakes. Like we had a blown input on a vocal track and it sounded like shit, but then we threw up some, you know, we put some effects on it and we threw it in the background and gave it kind of an ethereal sound to like kind of haunt this one section, you know, things like that. It's like happy accidents. I love that philosophy, but I struggle with that because sometimes I can't get over that. Like I keep making this mistake. It's my fault. I'm bad. I'm stupid. I'm the one.
Well, that's that narrow-mindedness. Yeah. That's that, like, limited negative perspective.
Negative self-talk. Yeah. It's the fear. Yeah. Again, going to the art and fear.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a big thing in the book, Art and Fear, where he talks about this idea of never not being afraid. Because that's almost sort of an inevitable part of the process, is fear of like, I don't know how this is going to turn out, or I don't know how this podcast will turn out. I don't know how this song will turn out. I don't know how this painting will turn out. Right.
Yeah.
It's always laden with this thing, but people don't really care what you say. They care that you mean it. You know?
That's
going back to that authentic
100% agree with that
thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, before we wrap up our show today, is there anything else that we didn't touch on about the song that you want to touch on, or anything you want to share, like upcoming projects that you're working on that you want to plug?
Not particularly. I just hope that everyone's staying safe out there, and it will be really interesting to see how or if things truly turn back to normal with vaccinations becoming more widespread, and how mass culture will still influence our events. I don't know what that's going to mean for, you know, hardcore and punk rock necessitating close, intimate spaces.
Moshing.
Speaking of being authentic and wanting to do it a particular way. I might have galleries at the end of this year for, you know, some of my oil painting monsters. So be on the lookout of that shit.
Cool.
And follow me on Instagram at Beege Barrett. And
cool.
That's what I've got. Thank
we're bad
you
at ending podcasts. So this is how we end the podcast.
I kind of like how we end podcasts.
Oh, wow. Wow, Em. You're usually the one who says it.
I've come to a term of acceptance.
All right, so band names. You've sat in on an episode.
Band name.
You know what this is all about,
this
right?
This isn't Brett's first time on the podcast, actually.
Yeah.
He was secretly in the background.
He was a hidden member in one episode.
Yeah.
We'll let you figure out which one. do you keep a list of band names? Is this something that you do? Or are you aware of the idea of, oh, that's a good band name when someone says something?
You know, in our house, it's always something punny. And my submission...
I have a lot of puns. I have a lot of puns. It's bad.
My submission is Fart Finugan.
To go,
like
the
hey,
break.
We're Fart Finugan from Portland. We'll be done in 30 minutes. We got shit and piss in the in the back for sale, something like that.
Buy our new merch.
Buy our shit and piss.
Okay, well,
Fart Finugan.
Well, here's the thing.
It I would wear a shirt that said
what
Fart
kind
Finugan?
Of band would Fart Finugan here's be? The thing. Ready, go.
Okay, Fart Finugan would be like a Fig? Punk. Folk polka band.
Wait, did you say Fart Fig Newton?
Sorry, no, I said Fart Fig Newton.
I say it's really hard to say. Fart Fig Newton. I think that's funny.
But here's the thing. I have the perfect album name for this one, but I'm going to save it for the album. We'll talk about that when we talk about it.
We've already had a polka band.
A polka band?
Been there, done that.
Funk polka band?
You said Portland, and that struck a chord. I feel like... definitely some sort of punk of something.
It's Farfiknugan, right? Farfiknugan. But it's Fartfiknugan.
Fart Fig Newton.
Well, we
Fart
changed
Fig
it.
Newton.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, that's
okay,
what
it is. So...
It's a work in progress. It's and grown.
Yeah.
You know, we're not constrained
you know
by
and
those.
And you know what? Their first album is called Bum Release Party.
Okay.
It's an album release party, but with Al. So
all
it's
right.
Bum Release Party.
All right.
That's a pretty good album name.
You could do volumes.
Volume 1.
Volume 1. Two,
Bum Release
volume
Party
three,
with Al.
Volume 42069.
A Bum Release Party featuring Al. Volume 1.
Okay, so
my only request is that maybe you should start with this section as the intro because it's a great icebreaker.
Oh yeah, that's a good idea. We should come up with a goofy icebreaker.
Oh my goodness, you guys. Seriously, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
We can do our exit strategy here.
What?
Thank you.
What was the? What is their genre,
what
though?
Was the genre?
Portland punk that doesn't want to be into the lines of any genre, so they have a little bit of everything. There's a banjo, there's a sitar, there's a saxophone.
It's a single artist.
There's
who
a
just,
recorder, there's
just,
a ukulele.
Here it is.
So it's prog.
It's a touring. It's a touring, singular touring musician who just... whichever city they're touring to, they go to the local pawn shop and buy one of each instrument that they find, and that is the instrument that they bring to the show, and then they improvise everything on stage. And he
but then
always,
how do they recycle it? Because
they
seem like the types
say,
that would recycle
hello,
these instruments.
Hello, we're Fart Fig Newton. Shit.
Newton?
Fart Fig Newton.
I'm Fart Fig Newton, and this is my single off my. This is the single Fart Fig Newton off of my album release, Bum Release Party, featuring Al, Volume 1. That sounds appropriate.
All right.
God, that's terrible.
That was a jumbled
I would
hot
leave.
Mess.
I would just be like, ah, bye.
But I could definitely see that being a skit on Portlandia.
I think it's a, you know, it's a space rock band led by Frederick Fart Fig Newton.
Yes.
Frederick Fig Newton.
Yeah.
And his brother
he's
Nate.
The creative mind behind the band, yeah.
Fig Newton. All right.
I feel good about that.
That was pretty good.
Well, thanks for coming on our show today.
Yeah, thanks again. We really appreciate y'all coming on.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah. As and always.
Until next time.
Are you going to do it?
No.
You're not?
Nope.
Okay, I'll just push this button then. Thanks as always to Cole and BB for the music at the top and bottom of each episode. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Mixtape Remedies. And check out mixtaperemedies.com.